Welcome to Caribbean Millennials.
Hello, listeners. It's another week, so you know what that means, another episode of the Caribbean Millennials podcast. You know, your three favorite hosts. I hope we are. Probably have other podcasts you listen to, but yeah, we're here, we're back, another episode, chatting, you know, about the big important topics that are affecting us. Anushka, Adani.
You know, the funny thing is, when you said your three favorite, my head just went to the three best friends that anyone could.
You said I deal with on a regular basis. Alright.
You need a little music in your life, babe.
I have music in my life. But anyway, yeah.
Not Adani. Cartel.
Adani, how was your week? You know, it's a new week.
Was a wild week. It was a wild week in the community in St. Lucia.
Okay. Oh yeah, boy.
I thought you were gonna say,
nah, you're living on edge over there. I know what zone you're living in there, boy.
I thought you were gonna say it's been a wild week in Caribbean millennial land.
Has it? I don't know.
Like that, I missed that. Like, I thought we were all in that land. But yeah. So it's been a wild week, apparently. You know, roller coaster.
Right? Oh, yeah. People getting shot, people getting stoned, people getting stabbed,
babies being left in bags. It's wild.
Yep.
Right?
It's wild. But all kinds
on the,
of wild.
On a positive side, though, anything good happened? You know, for
yes.
You.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had Spanish Saturdays with a Z.
You had what?
And an E. Spanish Saturdays with a Z and an E.
A Z and an E. Please explain.
Yeah. Did you mean Saturdays?
But Saturdays, as in the days the food will put you in after you eat it.
Yeah,
but you said Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. But it's days with a Z because Z's are Spanish, like Zorro.
Okay, Adani. Okay.
So we made tacos, we made nachos, soft shell tacos, and then nachos with the bed of ground beef and then cheese and then the.
Also, you have a chef in it, basically.
Oh, yeah. That's and then today I made Chinese. So I had sweet and sour chicken.
But you just
globetrotting, huh?
Oh yeah. Corona has really just expanded my cooking abilities. Like, you know, I feel
culinary skills.
Yeah, I feel like Corona was the spider and I am Peter Parker and it just bit me. And then I just blossom into Spider-Man.
Oh my god.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. You guys are the first. Adani is the new culinary Spider-Man.
Wow.
Apparently.
I wasn't ready.
Anushka, how was your week?
How was my week? Oh!
Bitch, it was your birthday.
Yes, clap for my birthday. Hey. Roti Shell is a wrap for my birthday.
No, that.
I was like, hold on, it was my birthday this week. I probably struggle to remember because there are a lot of empty wine bottles that need to go into my recycling right now.
Yeah, and you were just getting mad shit all week long. It was like you were like the queen getting everything.
My husband came through, y'all. Oh, applause for Vinan. Applause for Vinan. Great job.
I'm so tired.
Wow. From doing things or doing things?
Whatever, Danny.
I didn't know being nice was so tiring.
If anybody knows Vinan,
bruh,
I did have to like pause for a moment because I was like, are you okay? Like, you sure?
Being so nice was so tiring. It's not in my nature. It's like, what is going on? I'm doing all these nice things. So I'm not tired here. But yeah, so you had a good week.
Yes, I had a very good week. I'm officially 29. I got 1 year to.
Ooh.
1 year to what you are. Why you say it so bad? 30, not bad. I'm 31. I'm out here living my best life.
Nah. You know, it's going to be this last year, you know, it's ending an era. I gotta put in some era.
Oh my god,
I'm one of those people, like, I feel like I have things I want. You were like that. You have things you want to accomplish before or by 30. So
I am.
It's true.
That's why I don't think I accomplished them.
You totally did. Whatever. Next.
Okay, fine. Please just tell me what I have accomplished.
You just don't remember.
You know, bye week was a week. You know, I was out here waiting on my wife, hand and foot. Hiring. Nah, JK.
Making meals.
Bro, it was just a week. I feel my coworkers are dumb. That's my stance.
Oh my god.
You know, I'm not going to go in depth into it, but apparently they want to go back to work already. Like, okay, cool, great. Y'all do that. I'll be at home, working from home, until the company sends an official memo saying that I must come in. But yeah, it's been a week.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so on that note about people going back to work.
By the way, wait, hold on. Do we have any news items? Okay, good, great. Because I feel like it would just be something coronary. Oh, no, we do. We do have news. So, we were watching Survivor, right? And Survivor ended and the news started. And there was a news article that had me startled. Like, I couldn't believe this. Do you know 16,000 Americans have volunteered to be infected by the coronavirus just so they could test the vaccine on them? I don't want to leave that out there for you. You know,
do you want people to get the coronavirus?
No, and 16,000 people have volunteered to be infected. Like,
is it paid?
It better be. I hope so.
Sounds like a Danny.
It sounds like a paid gig. No, it sounds like a paid gig. Here's 10 grand, so we can give you corona, and you people might die. Just said yes.
You might die, but hey, you know, it's for a good cause.
At least we'll pay off your car note.
Oh my gosh.
So, Hera. So, here's my question. Missy, what's your price tag if y'all had to be infected willingly by a virus?
Depends on the virus.
I wouldn't do it.
And I say depends on the virus. Okay. Anushka wouldn't
do it. Yeah. Like, you're not infected me with some incurable STD, you know, ever. But if you were to tell me you'd give me the common flu for like $1 million, I'd be like, well, shit.
First of all, the one you pays me $1 million just to infect you with the flu.
They
could probably do that for free. They just send somebody out there to sneeze on you.
Boom. Yeah, that's an example, yeah. But I figure I have a good chance of fighting corona off, you know, for $1 million. All right, I'll do corona for $1 million.
Y'all heard it here first. If any one of those pharmaceutical companies,
so if the CDC or anybody else
for a million. A cool meal
starting price,
right. So let's go.
Today, and if you want me to go to bed early and on time, double.
Oh my gosh!
All right, Anushka, talk to us. What are we talking about this week? Who are we chatting with? You know, because that's our new thing now. We have, like, mad guests on it. If you're having guests, we have another guest this week. Okay? Just let me all know. So,
oh, what a guest.
Yeah. Bring that there.
All right. So, Vernon was talking about people going back to work, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Things are opening up, right? Countries are opening up, starting to reopen their borders. And for Caribbean countries, tourism
where there's work. There's vacation. There's work, there's vacation.
Okay.
Right. So, tourism, right, is extremely important, as you all know, for our different Caribbean countries,
Caribbean economies. We'll get into that.
You know, it's a vital part. It's what many of our economies are built on, right?
Yeah.
So, this week, I am privileged to have this Caribbean tourism marketing expert, as well as friend of mine, Christy Morris, join us on the podcast. Say hello, Christy.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Anushka, and everyone for having me today. It's such an honor to be here.
Yeah. So let me tell you a little bit about Christy, right? So Christy is, I think she says she's from the Bahamas, but she lived in St. Lucia, lived in Barbados. She has family from St. Vincent. So Christy is a true Caribbean millennial, right?
That's right.
Been around, right?
Ooh, why you feel like that?
No, in a good way, though, Anushka. In the Caribbean, in a good way.
Sorry, jeez. Even jet-setting. How about that? Sorry, jeez. All right. So Christy currently works as the digital media coordinator at the Bahamas Ministry of Tourism and Aviation.
Okay.
She previously was a communications consultant at the Caribbean Tourism Organization. Christy also has a bachelor's in commerce and in hospitality and tourism, but she also has a Master of Science in Tourism Marketing from the University of West.
Oh, I see she has mastered science like I have.
Okay. Yes, she has. Christy also has been on the speaking circuit. It's taken her to other islands such as Curacao, Barbados, the Bahamas, Belize, speaking about tourism in terms of e-learning, how travel brands can improve, and she's really just been in this industry and space, especially in you know, ministries and organizations. So she has
see how it works from the government side as
exactly
well.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So happy to have Christy here and ready to dive into kind of the future for tourism and what we should be thinking about as countries start to open up and whatnot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Anushka, if I just can go ahead and ask a question, because I know that a lot of people have been asking, you know, how has COVID-19 really impacted tourism globally as well as in the region? And I just want to, if I can just start with
Okay.
So, well, first of all, from a global perspective, I know the World Tourism Organization, you know, they anticipate a decline in overall international tourism receipts of 300 to 450 billion US dollars. And when you look at their receipts from 2019, y'all want to guess how much it actually generated? In 2019, tourism receipts amounted to $1.5 trillion, according to the World Tourism Organization. So you're looking at almost one-third of that completely gone by the end of this year. And as it relates to the Caribbean, I know that the first few COVID-19 cases were reported in the region. I think that was in late February, early March. So as a result of that, you know, many Caribbean countries have closed their borders and they've required that travelers going quarantine and so forth. The Caribbean Tourism Organization, they are saying that, you know, because 2019 was a record year for the region, we actually had 31.5 million visitors to the Caribbean in 2019. And in the Bahamas, we had 7.2 million visitors here for the first time in history. And now we're up to zero. It's just a striking difference with that. And what they're actually seeing was so interesting is that this whole pandemic is going to take us back to the tourism arrival figures from 1995, 1996.
What?
Yes. I got goosebumps when you said that.
Correct. So you're looking at a 50%, right? You're looking at a 50% reduction in arrivals to the region. So from now, you're probably going to get 15 million visitors for this year. You know, that's the least amount that they're saying, you know, so we really have to, you know, so I mean, the impact is very severe. And it's so interesting to see how the different sectors are responding to this, too, especially with, you know, the accommodation sector, because I know there's been a lot of talk now about where people stay at hotels or will they choose Airbnb properties or other homes sharing properties, just mainly because of, you know, they say I don't want to be around other people in a hotel lobby or in the elevator. So, you know, there's been a lot of discussion in this space about which one will come out strong. You know, but it's interesting even to look at the data from the hotel sector, for example, because this company known as Smith Travel Research, or STR, they specialize in doing research about the hotel industry. And now, okay, this is so interesting to me, because average hotel occupancy for the industry is between 60 to 65%. You want to guess what average hotel occupancy is right now as a result of COVID-19?
10.
Zero.
Yeah, 10%. Well, it's actually 10% right now. So you tried. And, you know, I mean, it makes sense, because most of the properties, especially in the region, have been used as quarantine facilities and so forth, you know. So we're really going to have to see how this plays out. And some hotels even started to introduce new ways of making sure that their sanitation measures and their protocols are in line with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. They've been doing all of that. For example, Marriott is using electrostatic spraying technology to ensure that they properly go through and do like a thorough clean of all of their rooms. And the Hilton is working with Mayo Clinic and Lysol to launch a new room seal in June. And that essentially is just going to show that it's going to be something that indicates that no one has entered the room once it was cleaned, you know, so all of those things are going to be taking place, right? And then home sharing companies like Airbnb and HomeAway. Airbnb is also capitalizing on the opportunity to really show their guests that they are taking this really seriously, especially as it relates to introducing new sanitation measures that are also in line with the CDC. And, you know, Airbnb in the industry, they are known as disruptors. So the real question is, you know, has COVID-19 disrupted the disruptor, essentially, you know? And so and also with another example here, I just want to mention quickly, this company in Austin, Texas, called Turnkey Vacation Rentals. So what they're doing is they have over 5,000 properties across the U.S. And they're actually using this app that cleaning crews have to use when they go out to clean the properties. They have to follow a certain checklist, right? And on that checklist, they make sure everything is done, and they have to take photos as proof and upload it to the app to ensure that, okay, this is what I've done for the day. You can check and verify that the area is clean, you know, according to the photo. You know, and I think what is so interesting about what Airbnb is doing that I must give them credit for is that I don't see hotels doing, because although you can't really book a hotel room now, you know, what they're doing is they're introducing virtual digital experiences. So what you can do is you can go on Airbnb's website and you can actually pay to do a cooking class with a destination for someone. The destination will have a professional chef, and you will have a one-on-one experience with them. And then they can show you how to prepare a certain recipe or meal from that country. And therefore, you know, you're still being able to really engage with a certain destination on that kind of platform. And these classes range from like $4 up to $50 from what I've seen so far in the research. So I think I give them credit for that, you know. So although they can't book rooms in their properties, you know, they can still have some kind of income coming in from these virtual experiences.
Right. So I guess, Christy, there's a lot to talk about here, right? So mm-hmm. I think let's kind of start breaking it down piece by piece, right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned about Airbnb and being a disruptor, right? Mm-hmm. And I think COVID in the essence of everything is being a huge disruptor in itself, right? Mm-hmm. So even what you described is the quote-unquote disruption that COVID is, you know, instigating or initiating in the tourism industry, right? So you mentioned, you know, cleanliness and protocols and, you know, that kind of thing. You mentioned adoption of technology and, you know, modernization, right? I think something maybe you didn't bring up was, you know, I've traveled to Las Vegas and stuff and done like digital check-ins, right? So I think it's just kind of the balance between minimizing contact but still providing like a level of service that's kind
right.
of
right. Okay, so if I can just add in there, so yeah. What you're talking about now is you're now going from the accommodation sector, you're now bringing it into the transportation sector, which involves airlines.
Exactly,
and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, definitely we can look at that. So what airlines are doing, I mean, there's been several things that I'm seeing so far. So, I mean, even from like restricting the sale of the middle seat in an attempt to maintain social distancing measures. And even, you know, how they say, okay, well, if you're traveling internationally, come to the airport at least 3 hours ahead of time, you know, what I'm seeing in the research, this may take even longer now. So you're looking at even possibly a 4-hour check-in period. So, you know, which would involve things like checking your temperature. They're also saying that you're going to have an immunity passport to confirm the presence of antibodies for COVID-19. You know, some airlines will start to administer blood tests, like exactly what Emirates is doing right now. They're taking 10-minute blood tests for all passengers. That started on April 15th. Bags will start to go through a UV disinfection process to be sanitized, right? You know, of course, passengers will have to maintain social distancing in the waiting area. Even some researchers are saying the jet bridge, which is usually a crowded space, could be used as a sanitation tunnel of some sort, just to kind of provide last body sanitization. Yeah, so I mean so many things.
I mean, on the bright side, right? You see when it's time to check into the flight, right? And they call group one, but everyone from group one to group five just starts like clustering around the desk to you get in queue to get on the plane. And then people also like cluster in the jet bridge. Like, on the bright side, that may actually get us to get on the plane board faster.
Yeah, exactly. And I also want to just mention quickly about even technology, though, because they're saying that food and beverage services will probably be different, too, with touchless vending machines set up in lounges, you know. And then also even just print publications on the plane will probably disappear, too, you know. So brands will be encouraged to have digital publications that passengers can view it on their own mobile device or their tablets or iPads, etc. Right. You know, so all of those things are anticipated.
I hope plane media improves as well, so we won't be watching the same 10 movies on every flight.
That's true. That's the opportunity for that to be developed as well. Yeah, I agree.
Now, on the downside, is this going to make travel even more of a hassle than it was before?
It could possibly be longer, but I don't want to say it as a hassle because it's an opportunity for brands to be creative. You know, even airports, for example, there's an opportunity for them to, because they realize that, okay, the passengers are going to be in here for a longer period. Let's get creative with how we interact with them. Let's, you know, offer them different, type of amenities and so forth. So I don't want to say it's a hassle, but it's an opportunity for us to get creative with how we have people in a longer space. Of course, you know, yeah.
I think that's a fair point because I guess, you know, coming from the marketing perspective as well, right? You're looking at where people are at mentally, right? Before, people may have already been kind of stressed out about travel without, you know, a looming pandemic or, you know, a healthcare risk kind of on their minds. But they still had the enjoyment of like getting to their destination. So you imagine just adding that travel, you know, stress with that, you know, looming pandemic fear. I think a lot of brands will be trying to, you know, come in with that reassuring trust messaging, you know, security, like you're all right, you're safe kind of protocols, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, there was something I was going to ask. Buna, Narani, y'all have any other questions?
I was just thinking that it's comical that before coronavirus, airlines were like trying to squeeze even more of us on a plane. Like I think the industry standard was going down to like what, 23 inches, 24 inches between seats. Yeah. And they were thinking about, hey, like if you're in economy, you can even stand up. Like, you know, you're not that serious. So it's interesting now that they now have to put like seating between, like a space between seating, or even put some kind of cubicle between seats. So it's very interesting to see how this will change, like how things.
Yeah, but it's to the point that like the airlines, some of them are telling you, oh, if you want to practice social distancing, i.e. you want that middle seat to be empty, you have to pay for it and whatnot, which I think is a bit unfair.
And I think in line with the CDC protocols, though, they have to do social distancing measures. And I think based on that, they have to, whether or not customers have to pay for it or not, they have to implement some kind of.
I don't think the customer should have to pay.
Personally. Yeah, I don't think so either.
And part of this is because we've seen these airlines basically rob us of money for flying. The ticket prices keep going up. Then they want to charge you for your luggage. Then you want to pick your seat, they want to charge you for that. So I think maybe they should have a conscience and let that be the one good thing that they have done for people. Just, you know, don't charge someone for those seats. I mean, I know it's a pipe dream, it's been hopeful, but you know,
I think whether they charge us or not, we're still gonna get charged.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In the sense that it'll just be a line item on the thing.
Yeah, man. They will filter that somewhere down in the ticket price somewhere. Yeah.
If they have to put less people on that plane, it's going to be shared among the people that are actually on that plane.
Yeah, but my thing is they're already making so much money off that plane to begin with. Like, you would think, but anyway, moving, that's all we came here to discuss.
Yeah, so I have a question around investment, right? Because a lot of what you described earlier, right, increasing cleanliness protocols, increasing use of technology, increasing like all of these things, right, is adding, you know, for the businesses, you know, whatever, be it tourism, be it your taxi man, be it whoever, right, it's adding kind of extra inputs, extra costs into the cost of doing business, right?
Right.
And I understand it's, you know, precautionary and whatnot, but I mean, just thinking about it, if you were maybe, you know, maybe these larger chains could absorb something like that, even if they're feeling it, right? But if tourism income is already down, like some people may already just kind of be on the brink and to fight back and have all of these extra costs could really be detrimental to...
Bigger chains can absorb it, but when you think about it, look at how some of those bigger chains that are in the Caribbean have been letting workers go and whatnot during this time. So here's my thing. Do you think that with it, hopefully things opening up and starting back up, do you think they are going to input all those safety measures and hire back those people they let go?
I mean, you have to think of it from a business perspective, right? At the end of the day, it's going to come down to a balance sheet and a break-even analysis and see, you know, something has to cut, and staffing is generally people's highest like cost, right?
Yeah. Right. And I think to some countries, I mean, in the Bahamas, for example, in our order, in the government statements and so forth, I mean, they really are mandating for businesses to, you know, every employee has to have on a mask and so forth. So they are stating these things. But yes, it is expensive, especially for the smaller businesses. But I think for the companies that are more well-established, I don't think it would be a major issue because, for example, in an article I was reading by the New York Times, you know, they were saying that hotels will have the budgets to implement, at least the more well-branded ones will have the budgets to implement those kind of measures. But yeah, I absolutely agree. The smaller properties and smaller businesses, it probably will be a challenge for them. But it's something that we have to work through.
My question is, right, even though hotels, especially the large chains, have the budget, who pays for that on their bottom end? Because they don't want to make any less profits. So, like, who is that? Like, do people get paid less? Do the customers get charged more? Like, on what end are we going to feel the blue?
I see. Well, so far, I know that some properties have actually just implemented salary cuts already as a result of the pandemic. But with regard to paying for the, I guess, PPEs or personal protection equipment, the employer will have to pay for that. Employees should not be responsible for paying for their own, I guess, wipes on, you know, I mean, unless they feel that they want to have their own. But I mean, I think it's been mandated by the government to, or for employees rather, to they have to provide these things for their employees.
So here's my question. Seeing that basically if you're going to be plunged back to 1996-1995 with regards to our tourism sector and whatnot, do you foresee anyone willing to want to come into the Caribbean and, let's say, invest more in let's say building a hotel or whatnot in this time? Or do you think there's a way to entice people to want to come and still try and pour money into us for this type of stuff?
No, I think there's definitely still going to be an opportunity for investments in the region. And also I just want to be totally clear on that, because those figures that I was saying, they were just tourism arrival numbers just for the 1995, right? But I think when we get past this stage, the demand will go up. And I mean, I know people abroad. I mean, our main source markets, at least for the Bahamas, are for the U.S. and Canada. And people are, I mean, they've lost their jobs. I mean, they're not going to be so excited to travel right now. No, their first priority is going to be about putting food on the table for their families. They're not worried about a trip right now. But, you know, when we look at the cruise sector, for example, I was just going over some figures. And I mean, the demand for cruise travel is up still. Bookings, there are still bookings for 2021. Right? Yeah.
That was going to be my next question.
Same. Christy, I love how you're flowing. I feel like I
Yeah, because.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you. We saw with this whole COVID thing when it was starting, I feel like the cruise ship sector, that took a hit, in my opinion.
Yeah,
some of those lines just stopped running altogether.
So that was going to be my question. My question was going to be around, you know, with the tourism industry, the different sectors, right? So the cruise ships and, you know, I guess marine stuff, it being a huge part, and especially for somewhere like the Bahamas, you know, that's massive, right? The cruise ship arrivals. I think for me personally, there was, you know, we wanted to take a cruise in 2021, you know, for my birthday and my mom's birthday. But when we saw the infections on cruise ships and stuff, I was like, ooh, I don't know about this, you know, like strong pass. But it kind of surprised me with the bookings that I saw, the article on the bookings for 2021. Do you think that's a lot of like deferred travel plans?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And see, what the cruise lines have been doing, Anushka, is that they've adjusted their cancellation policies quite significantly. So what they've been doing is, you know, although that their sales and marketing efforts have stopped, they're giving travelers more flexibility to reschedule their bookings, right? And operators are even offering credits of 125% of the value of canceled cruise, to encourage passengers to rebook instead of asking for a cash refund. You know, so they're giving essentially more value. So that's how they are keeping that, which is a really smart way to do it, right?
Right.
But that's what's happening right now. That's why you see those bookings are still strong for cruise. Yeah. And, you know, we don't really... Oh, and also I want to mention quickly that, you know, that they... because the CDC had issued a no-sale order last month, and that's going to be lifted, scheduled to be lifted in July, right? But it could be extended again. Who knows? So I know I've seen that articles about cruise lines are ready to go as soon as that no sale order is lifted, they are just ready to go again. But, you know, operators are still working out what cruising will look like in the future. But, you know, they have said that they will likely start again with a handful of ships at a time. And, of course, social distancing measures on board will be strong for sure, you know, especially with new protocols and all that. So I think it's something to pay attention to for sure.
Now, on the back of that, what one of our government's protocols were for upcoming travel, in case it does happen, was that hotels would have to be kind of self-contained. So they would want hotels to basically keep their guests inside. So basically, you would be just coming on a vacation that has some kind of quarantine. So you'd be on a quarantine vacation, is what they precisely said. Now, the way tourism has worked in the past is that tourists can leave their houses, their hotels, whatever, and then they can contribute to the local economy in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
So now, going forward, both in hotels and in ships, how do these arrivals now benefit the local economy if you can only be on your ship or you can only be in the hotel where you're in an all-inclusive, not contributing any money to the local economy? How does that help people who don't directly work in those hotels or at the dock?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I would have to look into that some more, but I would really hope that the hotels that they have on that list would be locally owned or some at least partially locally owned hotels. So that way, you know, the leakage, the economic leakage is minimized at least to an extent, you know, because I really am a strong advocate for, you know, less leakages and more economic linkages in their industry. So it's very, I mean, honestly, with regards to the actual cruise itself, it's going to be very difficult for the country or the host destination to say, okay, well, let's try and make some money from these cruise passengers if they are just supposed to stay on board the ship. That's difficult to do. But with the hotels, I am praying and I'm hoping that at least they are locally owned properties where the local people can truly benefit from that business.
To what Annie's point, I've also seen some articles talking about how even for certain things like the taxis and different things, it's only going to be a segment of pre-approved, you know, taxis that, you know, follow whatever guidelines and stuff like that. So I think in the reopening, there are a lot of people who are still going to be feeling it, right? Because it's still like a staggered kind of reopening, right?
Yeah, it's definitely going to happen in a gradual process. So it will take some time before we get back to really where we were before. It's just all about baby steps, just to ensure that we be totally safe, you know. So it's unfortunate, but it's just a reality that we have to deal with.
Yeah, I was wondering what your point of view was, or if you've seen anything about potential, I guess the word is cannibalization. So let's say if there's any motivation for people to maybe come to the Caribbean instead of going to somewhere like Europe, right? So mm-hmm. if they had a trip to come to the Caribbean instead, because, you know, like our cases were lower or eliminated and it's a lot less crowded and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point, because I know we have a lot of, I know, especially in the Bahamas, we have a lot of secluded beaches here and private islands. So if people are interested in, you know, they want to take a vacation and don't want to be around too many people, we can promote that as an opportunity for you to come on a secluded beach, you know, in that
Firefest.
What's that?
I said Firefest.
Oh gosh, you know, don't even get me started on Firefest. Don't get me started on that. I'm not gonna comment on that.
So when you said opportunity to come to a secluded beach, it just sparked the ad in my head. I was just like, wow, Bahamas.
Oh, man. That was a rough one, but yeah, you know, we learn from our mistakes and we move on. So yeah, so you know, I mean, I know Thailand is doing that. I mean, Thailand is offering an opportunity for visitors to come and really just stay on a private island and so forth. So, I mean, we in the Caribbean, we have a similar setup as that. We have Sun Sand Sea. You know, we can find ways to promote a similar offering, of course, even better than some of these other destinations, you know. Yeah.
Makes sense.
I hope it answers your question, Anushka. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about, so I mean, you spoke about things like sanitation and technology, and Danny touched a little bit with his questions on the tourism economy, or tourism as like the lifeblood of an economy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know something you're passionate about is sustainable tourism, and you know how, I guess, tourism can do a better job in truly, you know, being more integrated with the communities and countries as a whole. What are kind of your thoughts on how the industry, you know, past the short-term things of like being prepared to take in people and getting the industry restarted, right? Mm-hmm. Longer-term vision, like, what do you think needs to be done, and what do you think we all need to learn from this experience?
Right. Okay. So, you know, with so much unknown about tourism's future, I think really it's an opportunity for us from a global perspective, right, to just take this time and look at addressing the long-standing issues that we have, such as, you know, over-tourism and how it impacts local cultures and the environment. So we have to do things that we can ensure that we optimize tourism impacts by ensuring a sustainable balance between economic benefits and socio-cultural and environmental cost. And so, you know, a lot of people say, okay, we have to diversify our economy, we can't be so reliant on tourism. And while I agree in diversifying the economy, I'm a big advocate for, you know, in saying that, you know, we, for tourism-dependent nations like the Bahamas, we, you know, economic diversification is kind of easier said than done, because our GDP, tourism accounts just over 40%, just over 40% of our GDP is from tourism. So, and over 50% of people are actually directly employed in the industry. So we have to do things, to really find ways to establish linkages with other sectors, agriculture and so forth, and minimize less economic leakages. And I want to just touch on the example of Jamaica, because speaking at a recent IDB conference, this lady by the name of Allison Pert, she was saying that, you know, although Jamaica's economy is so diverse, due to COVID-19, there's been some concern about among farmers. And I know initially you mentioned that Vernon, your dad is a farmer, so I actually want to ask you about some of the things that he's experiencing in St. Lucia right now. But I know with the tourism sector closing there, the farmers have excess produce, because they would normally supply that produce to, yes, the local population and the hotels and the restaurants. So they have that excess supply that's just spoiling right now. So that's an example of linking agriculture and tourism. But I'm Vernon, I don't know if you know, but I just want to ask about some of the impact it's been having in St. Lucia with regarding to farming and collaborating that with the tourism industry. I don't know if you're...
I was just talking to my dad about that this afternoon. I was asking him how his farm was doing and whatnot. And basically, he was telling me a lot of farmers... So one of our main things in St. Lucia is that we export a lot to the UK. I mean, export bananas and whatnot. And we do through this company called Winfresh.
I know Winfresh. Excellent seasoning. Sorry.
Basically, a lot of the farmers have not been paid in over 5 weeks for their bananas that they've sold, because Winfresh took money that they had in their company and put it in, basically use it for other companies that do drinks and whatnot for themselves. And it's gone to the point that those companies aren't bringing back the return that they want. So when the farmers sell their bananas and the money comes in, the bank just takes their money. So lots of farmers haven't been paid
Oh, wow.
in over 5 weeks.
Yeah, that's
And the thing is, the farmers want to sell to the hotels in St. Lucia, but the hotels in St. Lucia don't want to buy from the farmers. So the hotels in St. Lucia have done a thing where basically they have set up their own company and their own little food storage facility which supplies food for the hotels, because they did not want to be, they felt like they were being held hostage basically by the farmers in St. Lucia. The farmers were calling the prices for what they wanted, and they didn't want to pay, they thought it was too much. So to get around the farmers, they implemented their own way to supply food for the hotels. So they don't want anything to do with the farmers. And what my dad is saying, first of all, the farmers won't call in any unreasonable price. Because they didn't want to pay. They felt that they could have got, they should have been getting it cheaper or almost free to some extent. So,
yeah, so it's like a power struggle kind of thing.
That's what it is.
A lot of farmers, though, are surviving because now they can sell most of their produce to the locals. Because stores like Massey and the major supermarkets that were importing produce, they now is like they can't import as much produce as they were before. So I know a few local farmers that just sitting by the road right now is earning them more money than they were before. So, because people are now shopping locally more, especially if you couldn't go to certain places before, especially during the lockdowns. Like you would have to make a connection with your local farmer to get produce and food. So, and my parents have only been buying locally for the past few weeks from people in the community.
Wow.
That's another thing I was talking to my dad about. And basically what he's saying is that, yes, while the supermarkets are buying from the local farmers, it is a case of, and I don't want to make it sound bad, but it's a selling to your friends, basically. In that the people who are in charge of the local supermarkets, well, Massey's Signature, for example, the people who are in charge of connecting with the farmers to buy from the farmers are selecting their friends, basically. So the farmers are not getting to sell or are not getting to sell as much. That basically that kind of thing. So some of them, like I said, are being forced to sell by the road. And some of them are making money and they are selling produce, but at the end, they still end up losing more, because what you see them selling on the side of the road is probably a fraction of what they have sitting on their farm, just sitting there.
That's true.
Going to
waste. I think and what y'all are saying brings to point a couple of things, right? One, that, you know, even in theory, it all, you know, makes sense. The actual implementation and human behavior, right, corrupts the theory.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, I think there needs, more or less, there's a missing link between not only agriculture and tourism, but just agriculture and food processing and manufacturing, right? I think if we could focus more on, you know, manufactured products, right, that would have been a point between raw material to source.
I mean, you saw how my father told me something today on the phone, and I was shocked. I did not know this. Like, I knew this was a profitable product, but I didn't know. Because I talked to my dad, I told him something about bees and honey. Some friends of ours in the group were talking about it. And my father saying, yeah, if people can get into that, yeah, it's a bit time consuming, but it can make you money. And he's telling me a 1-quart bottle of honey is selling for $70.
Easy.
Expensive. Wow.
I'm like, what? I'm like, let me start my bee farm right now then. If it's not. But like my dad said, he believes a lot of he says the people in the agriculture industry in our island, for instance, they know that there are ways for us to make money in agriculture, but he's saying he's seeing that a lot of the policy that the government is pushing is all geared towards tourism. They don't want to invest time in agriculture. And he's saying, he's not saying you cannot do that, but he's saying, for instance, you could actually link the two together, like you guys are saying, link them together and make one, make the other profitable and whatnot. But
it needs to be a truly mutually beneficial relationship.
It really does. Yeah, I think at the policy level, I think it really should be implemented there to really, because I mean, yes, I agree at policy. Yeah, definitely it has to be at policy, because it's the only way. I mean, otherwise hotels would probably just not use them at all, not use the farmers at all. And that's really unfortunate, you know, because we definitely want to establish more linkages. So it has to be forced at the policy level.
Well, and I think what y'all are saying, you know, like policy is great, but it's like the policy and the accountability and enforcing implementation.
All of that in one.
Because even if you have to think of these cleanliness guidelines and all of that, right? Social distancing guidelines, everything like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of that, for it to be successful, is going to depend on a heavy level of enforcement, well, right?
Well, my thing is a lot of these people are going to do it for a while, and at some point they're going to stop doing
right.
it.
And I think do we have the resources really in terms of the personnel to go out and make sure that these people are doing these things? I think this is where technology comes in, though. We have to go beyond conventional thinking and really adapt to new technology to really just be more accountable for, yes, we're creating these policies, but we have to ensure that these are being actually done through, you know, we can check with different types of technology. So then again, that costs a lot of money. So, you know, it's
yeah, it's like a catch-22, like that problem.
Yeah, but I think it's worth it. The problem is when policy is put in, it's like half-assed, to be kind. So there's always, like, take a large hotel chain who shall not be mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if someone, like the government, says, well, you have to buy at least 60% of your produce from a local entity, then said company would smartly decide, well, I don't want to buy from the farmers, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to make my own shell company where I just import my produce and I buy from that company locally. So technically, I'm buying from a local company, and you can't tell me anything, and I'm still getting the same rates I was getting before, which is what KFC basically did in St. Lucia. They told them they had to buy most of their chicken from local farmers, and they started their own company called Real Foods, where they basically get chicken and then they sell it to themselves. So why would you not see that? Like, why was that policy not updated at a certain point? I mean, like, yeah, okay, so that's illegal, and because you all found that loophole, now we're gonna fix it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like when you just put the policy in place and expect it to just magically work without checking up on it, then you know that's when you have, you know, button it.
No.
But onto your technology point, there are things that we can do, and I was just talking to Vuna and Anushka about this last week, and we were talking about like a seed to sale system where you have the farmers with like a wholesale sale where they get proper market rates, and then you force the hotels and other businesses to kind of buy from the marketplace. Otherwise, they would have to pay more exorbitant taxes, and by supporting local, they get more of a tax break. You know, things like that can be implemented using technology.
Yeah, that's a great example. Mm-hmm. I agree.
I have a question. Seeing as, you know, with all this COVID stuff and, you know, closing countries and opening back up, you know, tourism going to, you know, kind of be moving a little slow in the Caribbean. Marketing is one of the things you do, social media and that kind of stuff. Do you expect, do you give us an idea, basically, I guess, of what we can expect to see in terms of marketing with regards to tourism in the Caribbean? Because I'm assuming we're going to want to be trying to market ourselves more than ever now to try and draw people to come and
spend time on our islands. Yes, absolutely. And I think we're in the crisis now, and I think that throughout each stage of the crisis, we have to market something and stay in contact with our customers, our guests, so to speak, right? But I think immediately, like right now, we're slowly starting to reopen. I think we're going to be focusing a lot on domestic marketing or tourism marketing campaigns. And for example, the Bahamas, we have 16 main islands that embody the Bahamas right now.
Wow.
And so that we promote as unique destinations. So I know there is a absolute desire from people I know here who want to just go island hopping throughout the Bahamas. And I know the government is actually just, I think it's going to be starting tomorrow, that's actually lifted the ban on we can travel between the different islands now. Because there have been a lot of people who have been stranded in one island and trying to get home. So domestic tourism marketing is going to be on the forefront of this.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also when we start to market ourselves internationally, I think it's going to be a lot about showing people that we are taking measures to ensure that we are a safe, clean destination or region rather, and that will help to restore confidence in them and make them want to come here. So just as simple as a social media post, you know, about showing what's being done in a hotel, how clean it is and stuff like that. I think we're going to have to use those methods to really market ourselves going forward.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know.
To piggyback off that statement, what percentage do you think can islands like the Bahamas and St. Lucia expect from enticing locals more? I don't know about the Bahamas, but before St. Lucia, they don't really care about locals that much. So there would be a session during the off season where locals would get slightly more favorable rates.
Okay.
But is there a scenario going forward where local tourism in terms of like locals with the means being able to, go to hotels, enjoy themselves, maybe take a weekend off, a week off during vacation, because maybe they don't want to travel and it's just cheaper for them. If you just want a vacation, to just take your money and go to a local hotel where you can just enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think there's gonna probably be a lot of packages that are being offered. Like I know, for example, what they did in Hong Kong when they had the SARS epidemic in 2001 or 2002, I think it was. Yeah, 2002, sorry. They actually promoted, like, the hotels partnered with various associations and from the food and beverage sector. So you can pay one price and get a free meal at this restaurant or, I get, you know, some kind of discounted beverage or something like that. And you get, if you book three nights, you get one free. You know, so it's a lot of partnerships with different industry stakeholders to kind of really push the whole domestic market. I know of a property in St. Lucia right now that's looking to do that. I won't call their name, but I know for sure that they're looking to target domestic travelers in St. Lucia by offering discounted rates for their restaurant and if you book a room, you get a discount in the restaurant, that kind of thing. So nice. I think, that's probably going to happen really soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as we're kind of, you know, coming closer to the end, one of the things I wanted to ask is like just if we had to like dream or, you know, kind of get creative, do you feel like there are certain tourism or destination trends that are going to emerge out of this? So for instance, one of the things I've been seeing become more popular where we are here in the States, like in Texas and that kind of stuff, is more of those like escaping into nature stuff. So people doing cabin rentals because that's kind of like out and already socially distanced because it's like fairly remote. Are there any things like that you're seeing or you can think of that might be more alluring or on the uptick? Christy and you guys as well, if y'all can think of anything.
If Christy wants to go first.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
I'm actually working on an unnamed project with somebody who is thinking about doing that in St. Lucia. So having like experiences and having them be remote and sort of incorporating like glamping into it. So they're actually trying to bring that into St. Lucia and they want the website done and stuff like that. So I'm actually working with somebody who's looked. So I mean, I imagine there are probably a few people who have actually thought that, hey, this might be a big thing if people want to really social distance. Then come and social distance in the islands.
Right. That's awesome. And just to kind of jump in on that too, I think what I'm seeing right now in this stage, I'm seeing a lot of virtual tours taking place. I know with Google Earth, you can definitely do a virtual tour of various museums or in Europe, where you could do a virtual tour, of the Grand Canyon, you know, that kind of stuff. Sorry?
We've been on virtual tours for a couple of years now.
Well, I'm talking about with augmented reality, though. So, you know, 360. What's that?
It's a thing I would do when I worked at T-Mobile at lunchtime. I would just go on Google Earth and just pick a country and just, you know.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, and you know, it's amazing that people are, I mean, I think we're using it more now, especially in our marketing strategies. I know even with the Bahamas, if you go on our website, bahamas.com/360virtual tour, you can take a full virtual tour.
Nice.
Yeah, it's definitely something.
And even, ideas.
Mm-hmm, and even with travel agents now, you know, because in the travel industry, how we get travel agents to understand the destination, we bring them down on familiarization trips. So we can't do that now. So what they're actually doing is that they can take a virtual fam tour of the Bahamas on our website in a similar approach as well, with 360 videos and a lot of descriptions about different places. So there are unique ways that we are reaching out to the audience at this stage of the crisis, you know, through marketing. But I think as we progress further, we'll be able to see more different types of offerings that are coming out of the pandemic. Yeah.
Okay, so this is my one last question, but I don't know if Adani and Vernon will have others. So I love all the things that we touched, and I feel like we described a lot of, okay, what do we need to do to come out of this? You know, what is that progression going to be like further down the road, right? Events have been a significant driver of tourism, right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, carnival or some festival or something like that, right, is happening in a certain, you know, island or country, right?
Yeah.
So with... what have you been seeing or hearing in regards to tourism as it relates to events? I feel like events are probably going to be on the later side of things coming back because of all of the sensitivity around social distancing and, you know, bringing people all together. Mm-hmm. But I guess what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, that's a very good question too, Anushka. I'm definitely seeing, I mean, I'm seeing so many event cancellations. Even at first I saw a lot of them, they said, okay, they're going to be postponed. But then later down I saw, okay, we're just going to cancel because there's just so much uncertainty around when things will get back to normal, I guess, the new normal. And events such have a major contributing factor to the local economies too, because I mean, with events, everything is involved. I mean, you're talking about food and the whole production of it. I mean, it's just so much involved, and it's a really good money-making opportunity for the host destination. But I think until we get past this pandemic to really go back to doing a proper full-out event, such as carnival, and, you know, it's going to take some time. But I'm still going back to these virtual tours or virtual examples because I'm seeing a lot of people come together online with a lot of new virtual events. So they're still taking place, but in a new capacity in an online space. But, you know, it's going to be a while before things happen again in the events industry or event sector, you know, physically. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I guess there's an opportunity if, you know, people want to get creative about not only virtual events, but hybrid events, right? To just mm-hmm. kind of start that progression forward. And I think probably breaking down the types of events, right? Because, right. I mean, a music festival is probably not going to happen in the capacity that a music festival was, right?
No.
Not mm-hmm. soon. Right, music festivals and carnival where people are, you know, so close together. But right. I mean, if you take something like a wedding, right, mm-hmm. smaller scale weddings can probably still happen, or smaller scale weddings can probably actually be a hybrid event, right, where mm-hmm. maybe a couple and the family, a small member of the family can go, but then you do some kind of virtual component for extra, you know, mm-hmm. guests or something like that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I really like that example you made with the hybrid event type, because what we can do is even we can take something like our traditional festival here in the Bahamas. It's called Junkanoo. And it's similar to carnival in a way, but it's very traditional. And so we use musical instruments throughout the parade. And one of the main instruments in Junkanoo is a goatskin drum. And I think what we can do is there's an opportunity for us there to even have a virtual segment where we can show, you know, viewers in terms of how the goatskin drum is made. We can have a session online where we can play it and help people listen and learn more about different instruments of a certain festival or a parade, you know, so we can break it down and get very granular, you know.
Yeah, so That's something and more experiential and without actually being
right there. Exactly.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, guys, for our wonderful expert here?
No.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, it's been a really good productive episode. I feel like all these episodes lately have been like mad serious and productive. I can stop
planning the episodes if you
don't, because we have like good structure and whatnot. But yeah, Christy, I really appreciate all the information you have provided us with here today. You have no idea, a wealth of information. I think our listeners will probably enjoy this because a lot of people are probably wondering what is going to be happening in the coming future, given that tourism is such a big part of a lot of their islands and a lot of their lives.
Well, and I mean, we may even have a lot of listeners who may be people who've worked in the industry people and are currently laid off, right?
Exactly. So it's a good way to let them know what to expect and, you know, let them know that it may seem bad now, but it's going to get better.
Well, and I think even kind of on that perspective, right, something that may be valuable for people who have been laid off is, based on maybe some of the things that we've discussed, to think about a part of their job or something that they know in the tourism industry that may need like assistance or innovation or something like that, especially with these changes, and see if there's some way you can kind of fit or pivot, right? I think that's been the word we've been seeing, you know, all along here, right? Pivot. You know, see if there's some, you know, solution or something you can maybe come up with or band together with a group of people to kind of present with the background of what you know of the inner workings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much opportunity here, especially for Caribbean millennials, just to really become agile and to, you know, to come up with new solutions to the current challenges that we're experiencing right now, you know. And it's truly been an honor here to be a part of this podcast and have a discussion with you all. You all are so intelligent and bright, and you all have so many great ideas already. And I really did enjoy it because it was funny too at most points. You know, so I'm so honored, and thank you so much again for the opportunity, for having me. It was a great experience, and I you know, look forward to hearing and listening to it after when it's published.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christy. If you guys would like to reach out to Christy or, you know, spark a discussion, I guess you can find her on her channels.
Feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram or Facebook or wherever. You know, we'll be happy to have more discussions later on for sure.
All right.
Well, guys, it's been another episode of the Caribbean Millennials Podcast. Until next week, we're out.